At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Danny McCoy, the CEO of IBEC, is with me to talk about our collective wealth and the position it puts us in, Danny, and the opportunities it affords us. So we've got, I understand your view is, we've got a generational opportunity to transform the country. Explain that.
Yeah, so this is part of our electing for business kind of manifesto that IBEC for the business community to inform the governments, potential governments and political parties going into an election cycle, whenever that may be. And I guess to answer your question, go to the past first and project forward. If we realize in the past we'd have a moment like this where we have nearly 2.8 million people at work. That's the first thing to say. It's phenomenal. Our population is really high. That is great, right? It's great news. And it's so wonderful to see new Irish, like last night, becoming citizens like Bundy Aki and so on. That's a really positive for Ireland of the past. And then you add to that the money that's around, not just the Apple, because the Apple actually pales into insignificance because we're getting recurring, possibly $30 billion this year in corporate tax revenue. So if the past looked at the future and said, wow, those guys are now in a great position, the worst will be if we're in the future looking back and saying, how did we blow that opportunity? We have a chance now to actually build an Ireland that's sustainable for people, for the environment, because we've got the resources. We just need the willingness to do it. So having the people and having the money are two conditions we never had in our past. So what we need is a plan. And that plan's infrastructure, effectively, in all its guises.
And that plan will guarantee that the conditions that have allowed us to get to this point continue into the future, or that we change the conditions for a changing world?
Again, in taking that up, in the absence of doing it, we're definitely not going to have a good future.
Okay.
Doesn't guarantee your future, but it gives you a chance if you got your shape right in kind of sports parlance. At the moment, we're bang out of shape. We just don't have the right kind of infrastructure in the right kind of places, housing being the most example of that that we talk about all the time. But we see it in, you mentioned about justice delayed, is that, you know, living delayed by not having the infrastructure, having the housing, having the creches, having the schools, having the health service, having the guards, having the energy, having the water. And we know we're deficient in all those real things, but lots of money and lots of people.
But, you know, the 2.8 million people at work, that is a great thing, but it's also an example of kind of a depleted resource. There are not kind of idle people to fill all these positions in order to kind of expand and resource the justice system or the Gardaí or to find builders.
Yeah, so here comes the kind of hard bit then, is we can incentivize people into the right kind of productive activities. You know, and one of them is building houses, right?
Yeah.
It's not that builders aren't idle at the moment. They're building other stuff. Retrofitting houses is probably the most kind of egregious, if you think about it, in terms of it makes decisions for the individual households to extend their house and put all the accoutrements into it. But actually, you're crowding out possibly your own offspring to get onto the property ladder, you know. So this is where a government or a lead actor in society, usually the government, can actually make these hard decisions. So one generation has to be taxed to finance the next generation to get the resources.
But again, well, I guess if somebody from the Green Party in particular were here, what they would say to that is that we would face severe financial pressure in the future without kind of retrofitting programs and things like that.
And I'm for that. That's what I'm saying, is that we should be, not just in terms of housing, the houses can be made sustainable and their energy systems can be made sustainable. With a green agenda or more ecological agenda, very often when you have that debate, it comes down to the ecologists think that people are the problem. It's too many of us. You know what I mean? Whereas I'm coming from the other direction, saying it's great that there's more of us to live longer, healthier lives and to live them with the people we want to spend time with. And the opportunity is there for us to do that sustainably if we realize we're at a really golden moment in Ireland to do this. And unfortunately, we're giving the money away too easily by cost of living crisis narrative, which is maybe true for a few or a subsection of our society, certainly not true for the majority of our society.
Are there enough kind of resources within the labour market that could be redeployed to tackle those infrastructural shortages without looking abroad and having to import talent?
We see, when we had maybe a million less people going back before the crash, we were building 80,000, 90,000 housing.
Yeah.
So you see, you can do it if you incentivise the right way. And one of the things that really bedevils us at the moment, we've got excess demand, right? But we have a kind of a narrative coming from the crisis era that we want more houses, but we don't want to make builders or property developers rich.
Mm.
We stick on the second criteria. We want the first, but we then say we don't want them to be rich. And in fact, go down a little bit step further, say we want to be able to have a house where we want to live, maybe where our parents grew up or where we grew up. Like there are houses in areas that you mightn't desire, but there's kind of a narrative, I only want to be where I want to be. That's putting two different criteria onto the first one. It's a bit like the Oasis tickets. When there's excess demand, you're lucky to get the ticket. Then saying, oh, I want it for this price and I also want to stand in this place in the stadium. You're putting on other characteristics, but with excess demand, you're just lucky to get the ticket. The others then are subordinate. And here we're saying we want the housing stock, but we want the price to be this and we want the ownership of it to be the following. In terms of the political party, Sinn Féin had that kind of idea coming out from their housing plan. But, you know, the other parties as well had that kind of narrative going on that they don't want to make rich.
Is that evidence of a kind of a cultural scarring that still exists from the crash? You know, you speak to, you know, people in the banking industry and they would still say that, you know, that they see evidence of that. The idea that, you know, you kind of ask people in the survey what they think of the banks and they think they're the worst things in the world, but not their own bank. Now, I like my bank. I like the people who work in my bank. I have a good experience with my bank, but the banks are awful.
I mean, if a dentist made a mess, it wouldn't be a good idea the next time you had some dental problems to say, well, we're not doing dentists anymore. We might try an electrician on this one. You know, there's a bit of that kind of logic that
we, yeah.
So we try to punish the the building community pariahs for a number of years. And so they do other stuff. They go to other jurisdictions or they build other stuff in this society. And they have been building data centres, office blocks, industrial complexes and retrofitting houses, existing houses, but not new houses.
Yeah, because I was surprised, actually. I think it was Owen O'Brien who was in here when that housing plan was announced that he said, we have as many people working in the construction industry now as we did when we produced 90,000 houses a year. They're just doing other things.
And productive things as well. But if we want to get a kind of big ramp up in housing, I think then we've kind of got to incentivize it. And perhaps it's holding your nose and getting the things you want, paying the price for that overinflated ticket for the concert and standing at the back. If that's all you want to be, is at the concert.
How should we pay for it? Should we be paying for it out of those corporate tax receipts, out of some of that Apple money as well? Or should we be squirreling that away and borrowing the money to do it? I've heard this argument that, you know, when the economy hits the skids, it's cheaper then to dip into savings than to go to the bond markets when your ratings are maybe a little worse.
You know, ad nauseum, we've had this conversation, is the entirety of the private sector, particularly the households, have the money. You know, again, last night, 100.
They don't like to hear that.
8 billion, 80,000 on average, you know. But we've wasted in the budget on what I, you know, it's not that I don't think there are people suffering in our society. I just think it is scandalous that we've actually given every household money on this energy crisis for not alone two budgets passed, but the promise that there's more coming even before Christmas to get the numbers into 2024. There's going to be another energy credit given. Mm. The unfortunate part about those energy credits, everybody loves to get, you know, 450 or whatever, is that it adds up to about €1 billion. And so in order to just give everybody some money, costs €1 billion. That's €1 billion that doesn't go into the health service or the national training fund being released so that our labour force is getting future ready for decarbonisation, digitalisation, etc. So we're throwing around money, in my view, in this golden opportunity, which is clearly A, not needed, and B, very wasteful.
God, it reminds me of conversations myself and my wife have at the end of every month. They say, how the hell did we survive? I said, remember when we used to live at about a quarter of what we have now? And I said, if someone had told me this is what we'd be earning, I thought we'd be loaded. True. And yet, card, reject it. There's insufficient funds in your account, and it just flitters away on coffees and things like that.
Well, you never stand in the same river twice, as the philosopher says. A river's always flowing differently. And I guess it's sometimes hard to see what our living standards were even 5 years ago or 10 years ago. There's kind of often, unfortunately, it's the aging process, nostalgia. But no, it's clear that living standards in Ireland are really, really high.
Yeah.
You know, from the things we talked about, the luxuries of what would have been seen as luxuries before somehow are now defined as necessities. But anyway, it's not saying that we have to go back to sackcloth and ashes here. I'm just saying, as a society, it's a golden moment. And if we're not mature, we will look back and say, we kind of blew that.
Where? Because we kind of got fixated on housing, understandably. It's the big one. What are the other infrastructural shortcomings you'd like to see tackled in the foreseeable, so that we kind of, how did you describe it at the start, that we can undergo this generational transformation?
Some of those are kind of, you might call plumbing type things, is just laying down the infrastructure in water and energy and transportation systems. You know, there's a whole list. But if you had to, you know, I've been asked this question with the Apple money as a real classic one-off,
yeah,
you know, 14 billion, you know, not to waste that by just dribbling it into various things. It's a kind of a boring one, but I really think if we took that 14 billion and just got the plumbing right for the ocean energy, all of us intuitively can feel that that Atlantic Ocean is our big oil field. But in order to get the oil, the energy off the waves, we're going to have to do some preliminary infrastructure work on the shore, at ports and on the near shore. And you know, at the moment, everyone's like got great plans for it. But if you can't physically get it out of the ocean.
Yeah.
And so that's an easy one. It's not very exciting.
You will know because you represent people working in that industry. I mean, is there a reluctance from policymakers and politicians and governmental point of view in spending money on that front because they fear that technology will leapfrog the infrastructure they put in place?
Absolutely. And that's a real risk.
Like you go to the house kind of 10 years ago and there's kind of wires everywhere in the plant room because there's speakers in every room and then suddenly Bluetooth came along and Alexa.
Absolutely. We have great examples here in Dublin. We've got two wonderful canals as amenities, but they were actually put down as highways for the future. And
yeah.
The railway came along and it was a really bad investment. And I'm sure there are energy people out there saying the future is solar, it's helium, it's nuclear reactors, whatever. But most of us still kind of think intuitively that that ocean is possibly the great. If I had to make a bet, I'd kind of go that route. But you have to just get the plans done to actually get it ashore before you even head off out there.
Now, we do have big kind of infrastructural plans, I think, like kind of Project Ireland 2040 and things like this that get announced periodically and sometimes re-announced by government ministers when they need a bit of attention. Are you enthused by what is contained therein? Like, is this a criticism of it or just that we need to kind of get on and do some of this now?
Get on and do it.
Okay.
And not to use the money for things that are easy in the short term and, you know, in that regard,
like abolishing inheritance tax or something.
Well, but even just in the short term, like last April, the Department of Finance, who'll be watched now with the budget down the line, their estimate of the population was about 140,000 people less than will be in Ireland on the day of the budget. And that's only April.
Yeah.
So we need to kind of get ahead of an Ireland of the future and hopefully a larger Ireland, maybe a 10 million island.
Danny McCoy, CEO of IBEC. Danny, thanks a million for joining us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.